Hi, and welcome to another episode of The Advocacy Channel, a customer marketing podcast. I'm your host, Will Fraser, and this is episode 18. Today, I'm excited to welcome Shannon Howard to the show. Shannon is a customer marketing expert with years of experience building education programs for companies like The Predictive Index, the Institute of Integrative Nutrition, and Litmus. Shannon is now the Director of Customer and Content Marketing at Intellum, a leading customer education platform. She joins us today to share her best advice on how to start a customer education program right. Shannon, welcome to the show. I'm so happy to have you here today.
Thanks for having me, Will. I'm excited to be here.
That's great. And before we get into the show, I hear you've got some exciting new news. Maybe you want to share that with us. I think it'd be great to learn about.
Yeah, I just started a new role as the Director of Customer and Content Marketing at Intellum, which is an education platform.
Awesome. And so maybe tell us a little bit more about that role. What is that going to entail?
That will entail all kinds of content marketing. So social, website content, like blog content, resources, templates, working with our education team. So we have a great education team in-house, field marketing and events, and then, of course, all things customer. So big goal for this year is to just highlight our customers more and share their stories, highlight their voices in the content that we're producing.
Wonderful. And maybe, you know, for our listeners who don't know about Intellum, is there anything more you can kind of share with us about the company? I know you're new, but maybe a bit of an overview so that our listeners might check it out if it's applicable.
Yeah, Intellum is an education platform. So for employee education, so if you have internal learning and development, partner education, so if you have reseller network, partner networks that are selling on your behalf and you're doing some, whether it's product training, sales training, and then also customer education. So if you're running a formal customer education program, you're doing curriculum courses, certifications, e-learning, VILT, ILT learning, basically all things learning, we facilitate that. Yeah, so it's, I mean, perfect fit. I've actually been writing for Intellum for a while, and it involved in the customer education community. So it was kind of perfect role, perfect fit, perfect time.
Wonderful. Well, that sounds really exciting, and we'll have to keep our eyes on what's coming out of the content there as you're now kind of running that show.
Wow, I wish I could leak something that's coming out very soon. It'll be a behind the scenes of a very cool customer education initiative and program launch, but stay tuned.
Oh, very cool. Nice. I will stay tuned for that for sure. And you know, today we're here to talk about customer education, which obviously makes this for a really nice tie in there. And I know you have a lot of experience around kind of customer education. Maybe, you know, we can give us a little background on yourself there. Kind of how did you get into customer education and what's kind of your experience with it been?
Sure. So I guess I kind of stumbled into marketing first, where I went to health coaching school and people were just asking me to build their websites and write their blogs and do their emails and just all kinds of stuff. I don't know. I think they saw like young person, you must do all the tech things, which I think is really funny, but I was young and needed money and I had a willingness to figure it out. So I just did that. I ended up going to work for that school doing curriculum development. So that was kind of my introduction to education, was creating curriculum there and teaching as part of their programs. And then kind of moved into the SaaS space doing more content marketing, ended up as the product manager on a learning product. So kind of on the other side, the technical building a learning management platform. And then how do we facilitate all these courses, certifications? How do we kind of reward people and recognize people as they're advancing through their education? And then moved into customer marketing. So thinking about that tie-in of, right, I think customer education is creating a lot of that content, those learning experiences that are helping people learn whether it's your product or how to do their job well, right? So mm-hmm. I know at Sasquatch, you've got, you know, the digital advocacy certification. So things like that, like how do you help people understand the industry that they work in and how to do their job really well? How do you do loyalty and rewards really well? And so with customer marketing, it's, well, we've got all this great content. We've got to make sure that people know how to use this platform. you know, how do I serve that up to the right person at the right time so that they can, whether it's onboard or adopt a new part of the platform or advance in their career so they can become either power users of the product or advocates for the product. So kind of unintentionally, I definitely did not know the term customer education, probably even a couple of years ago, but just kind of found myself in the world of customer marketing and customer education, just kind of by happenstance.
That is a very amazing journey to go marketing, product, and then and education development in there as well. I can definitely see why Intellum was happy to help you, or happy to have you on board. You know, having that perspective of both being on the product side as well as on the content and curriculum creation side, that must be a rather unique perspective when you're interacting with other companies. What kind of light bulb moments do you think you kind of that allowed you to have in this space?
I know you and I have talked about this before. The advice that I give to people is learn product management, like take a course in it. You don't even have to do it, but so many of those product principles, number one, whether you're in customer education, customer marketing, marketing in general, understanding how your product team operates and how they work just makes you a better partner in general. If we just understand how other people connected to our work do their work, we can just better work together. But I also think a lot of those product philosophies, right? One of the things we talk about at Intellum is education is a product, right? You can sell trainings and course offerings, but it's also, you can think about the development of education as a product. So everybody loves HubSpot Academy, is pretty familiar with HubSpot Academy, but they started as a series of webinars. That was kind of their V1, like MVP education, just trying it out in the market. Are people responding to this? Are they interested in this? And then from there, kind of building it out over time. And so I think that idea of an MVP, of iterating over time, of not needing to know what all it is today, but kind of have a vision for the future and start to test, ship, and iterate, that's a maybe a big lesson that product helped me a lot with in marketing, and then also just building educational materials. Because the way that I was kind of trained in building educational materials is the whole shebang at once, which there's still iteration. You're getting feedback from students. With each time that you're offering a course or a curriculum, you're getting feedback and maybe changing up how you word the content, the order of the content, how you assess content or assess learning. But even just kind of like chunking out the development of it, right? Could we build as we're going and learn in real time what people actually need and what they're responding to, and kind of build out our education initiatives over time instead of waiting until we have the whole thing tied up with a bow and then deliver it to the world.
And I think that's it's a very important point you're making there. And you know, going back to that HubSpot example, because I think many people definitely hold HubSpot up as kind of a standard of education. You know, I think many of us have got stuck in that trap of saying, well, I've got to do this. This is like, I've got to do all of this. And, you know, how many, I don't know, millions of dollars and sleepless nights are we going to go through to get this thing done? So I think a really great point there. Now, when you say kind of just, you know, that approach of MVP and iterate, if I'm kind of staring at HubSpot thinking, wow, this is what I want to be, and I'll, you know, I don't know how to get there, is there like a concrete, like first step that you would say to do to start, you know, start your company on this educational program journey?
That is a great question. And I feel like the typical marketing response of it depends. I don't know that there is one tried and true path. It would be really great if we could say, start here, go to here, go to here, you know, start with e-learning or start with live training and then move to this. But I really think it depends on your business and the current business goals. So at my last company, there was definitely a need for on-demand learning, but the most immediate need was for live real-time training. So one-on-one training and group training. So that was kind of the education focus before they can move into more scalable learning and training. So I think it also depends on where your business is at, because it does actually take more time to build scalable on-demand learning than it does to do, you know, instructor-led training or group trainings. So I think it really just depends on what your business needs are and what the resources are that you have available. But starting with figuring out what is the business problem that needs to be solved, you know, where is the learning gap, right? Because not every business problem is solved by learning. Sometimes it's not an education problem. It's a product problem. It's a service problem. Could be an internal training problem, honestly, which education can help with as well. But figuring out what is that problem And then from there, what's the best way to solve it? But then thinking about, okay, long-term, how do we build this out to be maybe more multifaceted, more complex? How do we meet people where they're at so that whether they do, the limitation obviously with group training is not only time, but you're locked into a time of day. So if you have international customers, they probably can't make your live trainings. Or if people just have a standing meeting at that time, maybe can't make it, in which case those on demand or whether even recordings of those trainings can be helpful. But I think it just starts with figuring out where's the gap, what's the need, and then starting from there, but building with that end in mind that, okay, this is not the plan for forever. Just because this works today doesn't mean this is the forever format.
Right. And is there like a company maturity or size or any kind of indication where you'd say, you know, now is or isn't the time to consider education as a viable solution?
Ooh. I mean, I would love to say education is always necessary. And in the early days, I think we forget in the early days, maybe you have a CSM or an implementation manager implementing and training people on a product. That's education. It's just not scalable. You know, and we're just doing it kind of ad hoc and more reactively as we go along. I think what it really comes down to is like, do you have the resources and buy-in for it at the company level? So, you know, there's a lot of really talented education people out there who are doing, whether it's technical and support documentation or building out courses or creating how-to videos for product releases. There's so many different types of educational formats. But it's really, does the company have the resources for it? Are they committed to it right now where it can actually survive? Because the thing that I would hate to do is tell everybody you should totally have an education function and then put people in an environment where there's not enough buy-in for them to really thrive. I really think you've got to have a leadership team who understands the value of education, whether that's internal training. I know one of our customers at Intellum, I had the opportunity to write their story, but they started their customer education initiative came out of internal training. So it was people on their support team who were constantly having to learn the product. Then they became internal training people in internal enablement, which then became their customer and partner education programs. So it kind of started from there and they were able to show how valuable that was.
I'm sure that was a wonderful journey for them, but I think that kind of illustrates how organically this can come about, and maybe there are opportunities to find those little organic teaching moments that are already happening and try to build on that instead of necessarily, as we said at the beginning here, decide to launch the HubSpot Academy day one. I guess one thing that I'm always interested in is what are the mistakes and the pitfalls that people do when they go after these kind of programs? I'm the kind of person that I typically have to run into a ditch to know there's a ditch there. Doesn't matter that I could see it, but maybe we can help some people who can avoid some of those pitfalls.
Sure. I'd like to say the first one that I see a lot is not enough internal marketing. So people will be building something great and could be getting great feedback from customers and driving great results, but they're not really talking about it internally. And I think there is some element of you need to kind of like beat the drum and be a little out there about the thing that you're doing. And that could also look like finding champions on other teams, people who are willing to kind of lift you up and shout you out and talk about the great things that you're doing. So even if you are maybe less inclined to get out there on whether it's Slack or however you get in front of your company and talk about the great work that you're doing, maybe at an all company meeting, I think that's really important to do that internal marketing. And then I think another thing that I see people run into is you're thinking about what does success look like? A lot of people with a learning background, they're thinking about what does success look like for the learner? What does it look like for that person to meet an objective or establish a certain competency, but they're not always thinking about the business outcomes that they're ultimately looking to drive. So how do we show that when people complete certifications, that they're more likely to retain or they're more likely to expand or they're more likely to, let's say, participate in advocacy opportunities? So we want to be thinking about that, which maybe leads to pitfall number three is, and we've talked about this before too, of just data problems. you know, that your data may not all be syncing. That's pretty normal for almost any tech company now, is you've got a number of disparate platforms, not all the data is syncing across platforms. And so I think customer education people often have a difficult time showing and proving the value of those things because they've got information in their learning management system, but maybe not connected to, let's say, their CRM or their customer success tool. So they're not really seeing the full picture. And so we have to be able to, you know, drill a layer deeper and also kind of beat down doors to get data syncing and get those connections in place, because that's ultimately how we prove the success of what we're doing. So I think, I mean, if I could just encourage people in customer marketing and customer education to just like go ask for what you want. And just because it's not happening right away, don't give up on it. Keep like banging down the doors and get, you know, be friendly, take your IT person out for drinks, like, make a friend. So much of the work that I've been able to get done on a technical end was just making friends with people and then asking for favors.
A bottle of whiskey on the right desk can go a long way. Now kind of about, I want to dig into the data problems. I just want to step back a little bit to that internal marketing piece as well.
Yeah.
Cause I think this is, understanding that internal marketing, is something that I think we hear about, in conversations around customer marketing, advocacy marketing, all sorts of things a lot, but it still seems to be a problem that people are facing. Is there, you know, do you think there's a reason why that problem still exists? You know, we seem to know we need to do it, but we're not. So I'm kind of curious there. And B, you know, any tips and tricks for someone who maybe is struggling to get that internal marketing, you know, being heard?
Okay, so why is it happening? It could be sometimes we deprioritize it. We focus so much on our communication with customers or with prospects that we're not really thinking internally, right? People can do the same thing with education. They're educating their partners and they're educating their customers, and internal people don't get that same enablement and they're struggling. You know, so sometimes it's shoemakers, children with no shoes type, you know, we're just you know, marketing ourselves. It can also be a confidence thing, or we feel weird, you know, being out there and promoting ourselves. But I think we have to remember, right? If you're a marketer, you know that people don't read everything that you write. They don't read every social media post. They don't open every email. We know this for a fact. And so that's the same thing internally, is we think that we're being annoying, but we're not. And one of the things I think we really have to do is be, especially in a remote environment, a visible person. I know at a previous company, people were like, we've never had a remote marketer before. How are we going to know like what you're doing and that you exist? And I don't know, I was being a little like tongue in cheek, but I said, yeah, I think you're going to see more of me than you really want, because I'm a very vocal person and I just am constantly communicating with people. And so that's taken different formats. When I was building that learning product, we had a weekly update to our executive team. We called it Learn In 2, because that was the name of our product, was Learn. And we just did a quick 2-minute update of, hey, here's the highlights from this week. Here's the progress that we made. And here's what's coming up next week. And we had a quick little video. I would pull in different props, usually my cat, just to get people to watch. And then I'd have a little bullet point recap. Maybe you don't want to watch the video, but you'll skim through the bullet points. I just want you to know what's happening and feel in the loop. So I think sometimes we worry about being annoying or kind of full of ourselves. And then I think another thing is there's so many other priorities going on in a company that we don't always feel comfortable asking for time at an all hands type thing. But we need to remember, it's really important. People want to hear from us too. Anybody who's interfacing with a customer, whether you're customer marketing or customer education, you've got great customer stories and great experiences that you can share. And people really want to hear about that at an all hands meeting. So to not feel afraid to ask for 2 to 5 minutes to just share kind of what's going on, or a story of, hey, you know, recently so-and-so got this certification and they were able to use it to get a job or get a promotion or whatever it is that they did.
Years ago, I had some friends who were working on the Hootsuite educational material. Mm-hmm. And they talked about this, they shared a little story, kind of very similar to what you're talking about with the company, but everyone was just so blown away. It was at one point, the Hootsuite, I don't know what the certification was called, that Hootsuite certified started showing up as a requirement in job postings.
Yeah, that's my dream. When I ask about certifications, I think, is this something that someone would feel proud to put on their LinkedIn? And would it be something that they put on their their like resume that actually helps them to get a job. I think this is where we really start to show the value to the learner too.
Yeah. But I think I like kind of your point there. And just, you know, I think I learned something similar in a bit of a different expression, which was when you're tired of saying it, they've just started hearing it.
Ooh, that's a good one. Yeah.
And for, you know, I think for a lot of us, this is that part where like you are saying something that you are so, I've beat this drum so many times. And all of a sudden you're like your seventh, eighth time saying this. And someone in the room perks up and goes, "We're doing what?" And you're like, "You've been here for every meeting. How did this just happen?" And it's just like, it's just, we're all busy doing many things. So yeah, I like that, that point of yours there. If we go back to the data you're talking about, because I think data is, it's so easy to say I'm a data-driven marketer. It's so easy to want to be data-driven. But once you actually get into the pipes and the mechanics of the data, it can become really hard to really get the definitive data. If I'm in an organization where I don't have a dedicated team of data analysts or scientists working for me, or really anyone, I might be the only person who's running this data. Any tips for how to kind of start that data journey along with your educational programs?
Yeah, I think most people probably just need to hear that that's pretty normal. Some companies I've had the opportunity to work with some really great data scientists and business intelligence people and data analysts, but not every company has dedicated data resources. And especially when you're spinning up a new function, you don't always get those allocated resources, even if your company does have them. So you're a little left to your own devices to kind of figure things out. So I think we need to get comfortable getting into different systems, right? So in customer marketing, for example, and in customer education too, I want to know who are our customers and what are they doing in the product? What parts of the product are they using? How frequently are they using them? You know, what are the most frequently used parts of the product? What are the least used parts of the product? I want to just have more visibility into what's happening because that's going to feed my programs and my strategy. But then I also want to have access to our CRM or our CS system. I want to know like what's happening on each of those accounts. Can I tie whether it's customer marketing activities or customer education activities to, you know, whether it's renewal, expansion, things like that. In the early days, that might even look like exporting a list of opportunities from Salesforce and doing a report and looking. I think I might have shared at my last company, we had an enablement resource, and I was able to show that 46% of our accounts had kind of used or accessed this enablement resource. And someone said, "Well, how did you do that?" Well, I exported 25 spreadsheets from this one platform, and then I exported a list of our customers, and then I went through, and then I deduped, you know, and I looked at how many are there compared to the other ones. And I think we need to be really comfortable and okay with going into those spreadsheets and doing that, you know, data manipulation. I think it's General Assembly has a great kind of 101 data analytics course. I don't claim by any stretch of the imagination to be like a spreadsheet wizard. But that was really helpful just to understand some basic mechanics. And then just get comfortable kind of digging into different data tables. I know at one company that had a pretty established customer marketing function, 3 people on the team, we were still pulling raw data and putting it into a spreadsheet just to be able to show whether it was revenue retention or account retention, because those numbers aren't always easy to track. And they're not always prioritized by your RevOps team or your BI team. So just getting creative and comfortable in the weeds of all the manual data.
Yeah, you know, I think that is some really solid advice. I think sometimes we have this ability to think about the golden, you know, the end of the rainbow. We have an idea of what it should be like, and it can be almost block us from just getting in there and just making it happen. But mm-hmm. I like as well, you kind of, you know, you're tying that data, as that example you just gave there, you're tying that data back to like core business metrics. You know, like these are retention or revenues or upsells or something that's going to help get the attention of the company, right? Mm-hmm. You know, that the executive team, it's all well and good that 100 people have completed our training, but if those 100 people will never work with us and they didn't pay for the training, not particularly useful. So I love that little nugget you slipped in there as well, because I think that is just so important for us all to remember when we're doing this.
Maybe another thing that's helpful too when thinking about data is actually just starting with the question of, you know, are people who are certified, let's say, more likely to renew, more likely to expand? Are they more likely to participate in advocacy activities? And then you can look at, well, what data sets do I need to pull to be able to prove whether that's true or not? And that was something that was helpful for me, is to kind of write out what questions am I trying to answer? What hypotheses do I have that I'm trying to prove or disprove? And then figuring out the data to support that. My hypotheses are not always right. So that's fine and normal too. I don't want to be afraid of digging just because I'm going to find that I was actually wrong.
Right.
But starting with those questions can be, because I mean, you can get into the weeds of a spreadsheet and then kind of forget what you're doing there or how you're trying to connect all the pieces. But if you start with a question, you can get a better idea of, well, what would I need to look at in relationship to what else to figure out the answer to that question?
Yeah, it's interesting. I've had the misfortune, we'll say, to build multiple analytics dashboards and views. And I think that advice, just so that everyone hears it, is so, so important to start with the question, right? It is so, so easy for us to say, well, I need the data. I need views on that dashboard. It's like, and before you know it, you're like, you've got someone who maybe you do have a data team and they've jumped in and they're trying to display this data in every way they can think of, but they don't understand the core question or the core problem. And so you're you're going to get a lot of charts and graphs and things, but it may be totally useless. And your initial question, it may have been something that they could have, you know, you could have got an answer to in 30 minutes if it had kind of been figured out. So I think that's like such an important thing to start with your questions, right? Your hypotheses, your questions, you need to prove or disprove them, and then just make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wonderful. Now, one of the things that you had talked about, and this is what data kind of leads us to, you know, we get in there and we learn what's happening, what's infecting, what's not affecting, and then we evolve the educational program. And you mentioned kind of a little earlier about this idea of starting small, but when I'm evolving that program and I'm trying to get it to that dream state, any tips or tricks you have for people to how to kind of keep the evolution going, keep the momentum of the program development continuing?
Okay, so how to keep momentum continuing when we're iterating?
Yeah, I guess more broadly, maybe stepping back for a second, you know, really, you know, how do you recommend someone looks at evolving their education program, right? Maybe someone's just come in and they've got a program that's been there for 5 years and they're taking it on, or maybe someone's just started their first in-person training. But is there any kind of structure or strategy you use to kind of keep the evolution or to evolve those programs?
I think you want to take some time to assess what's currently happening and then what your business needs, and start to look at a roadmap of, well, what does that look like over time? And where do we ultimately want to get to? How do we chart our way there? Right. So if you're developing a product, maybe you have this vision of it and you're kind of releasing this first iteration, then you're building on it over time. So how do we kind of chunk out that work so we can ultimately get to where we're trying to get to, but we can't do it all today. And it really wouldn't benefit the business to try to get it all done upfront. We need to kind of release these things in phases, right? Whether that's, you know, because our competitors are going to beat us to market, or just because financially we can't afford to not provide value to our customers sooner rather than later. In terms of keeping the momentum going, I think it's just constantly reinforcing the vision, the mission of what it is that we're trying to do, and stories. You know, I before I knew what customer marketing was, it just made sense to me to tell student stories to my team. You know, when I was doing curriculum development, as I was meeting students from all over the world, and they were writing in and they were posting in Facebook groups and they were coming to our conferences and they were telling me their stories. And they were telling me about, you know, how the program changed their life and or how it changed their clients' lives or changed the world around them. And then I would bring those things back to my team and say, look, whether you wrote a landing page or you were involved in the curriculum development, you moderate a Facebook group, you do LMS administration, that's like you were part of that. They couldn't have had that success without you. And so keeping people in touch with the story too, I think so often we're behind a computer, we don't see each other in person. A lot of us don't know our customers. And so we don't know, you know, why the work that we do matters. And so continuing to tell those stories and this, the impact, the promotion that they got, or the really exciting life thing that happened for them because of the thing that it is that you do, whether it's your product, your service, your education offering, your marketing campaign. I had a customer come back to me, and at my last company, we had all these mentorship resources. January was National Mentorship Month. And so we just kind of compiled them all, sent them to customers in December. And then that person's boss said, hey, what are we going to do for National Mentorship Month? And they were like, well, now that you think about it, now that you say that, I actually have a whole host of things that I can do because this company over here set me up for success. And like even just those stories that help people see it's the little things that you do and they all matter. And sometimes we get so removed from that.
No, I like that. I think that's just, you know, I think sharing stories is always, always powerful, but bringing that in and then just, you know, really trying to understand the impact and, you know, we realize that wins are so important, and then you'll know how they're connected to that win for sure. You know, changing gears a tiny bit, what do you think, you know, the future of customer education looks like?
So I have a hope for the future of education, and then what I think very practically we need to be thinking about. My hope is just an elevation of it, that more people are starting to see and recognize the value, that we see more people kind of growing. And I think we are starting to see more of those VP and CCLO type titles, which is awesome. And then where I think we're going is incorporating more social learning. I think we all know that we are inherently social beings, that we learn best socially, right? So I could be going through the digital advocacy, you know, like loyalty certification. And that's one level of learning. But then if I can hop on the phone with you and I can have a conversation and say, hey, so I was reading this and then it reminded me of this thing over here, or I was thinking this is how I might apply it at work, or, you know, I might have to tweak it in this way. We're kind of bouncing ideas around. We're talking about what we learned. This really helps to solidify our learning and then apply it. So I think we're going to be thinking more about that. How do we actually facilitate customers interacting with each other, partners interacting with each other, employees interacting with each other, so they can kind of bounce ideas around and ask clarifying questions. And we'll see more of that in programs where it's, even if it's asynchronous learning, that there's still that opportunity to engage and interact.
I often find that that companies can be a little bit concerned about bringing customers together. They think there's a lot of work to it or something like that. Any views you think about how you would like rapidly facilitate that social learning?
So it could be, depending on the platform that you're using, how you're administering your learning, there could be a social element in there. So when I worked for this online school, we had Facebook groups. That's pretty, you know, that's maybe not what we would do now, but that was how we kind of encourage people to engage around different modules, because we had students all over the world and Facebook was, you know, kind of a popular platform for that demographic. But it could even be spinning up roundtables and just encouraging people to get together in real time to talk about things. So I think in the customer education Slack, they're doing book clubs, they're reading a book and discussing together. And even though everybody's a busy professional, I think we all crave this opportunity to connect with other people who do what we do and to bounce ideas around and to be able to ask questions and say, yeah, I would really love to collect all this great data to prove the value of my program, but like, I can't even get access to this platform, or like I'm limited in this way. And someone else can say, I mean, someone asked a question the other day and said, hey, we're not going to be able to buy a learning management platform right now. I'm thinking about doing this kind of hacky thing in Zendesk. Has anybody else done a similar thing? And five people were like, yeah, I've also done a really janky setup. Let's talk about it.
I just love personally, just, you know, for the, that kind of a story where I think we all believe that everyone else has their stuff together and we're the ones who are just trying to figure it out. And it's like when someone can just be like, hey, I've been there. Not only have I been there, it was yesterday. Like, it is not that far off the idea you're discussing.
Yes. That is, I find myself more often than probably anything else just telling people this is normal. It's very normal. even at very large companies that do have their stuff together in a lot of ways, very normal. Whether it's, you know, data platforms not syncing to each other, just all very normal.
Yeah. Yep. Before we break here, I just want to kind of ask, you know, is there one takeaway? If there's only one thing that a listener was going to take away from today's show, what do you think is the key point around education programs today?
I think I just want to say, get started, you know, find a place to start. Don't worry about doing the perfect thing or building the perfect thing. Like, you'll grow it over time. And to be okay with that, that it doesn't have to be HubSpot Academy today. You don't have to have everything perfect, you know, but just starting with something, because you'll learn from it. And really what we're trying to do is just help people. I don't want to withhold help because I'm waiting for the perfect solution. I think most people would rather have something than nothing, and to just move forward with that.
I like it. Just start. Just make it happen. I like it. It's kind of a message after my own heart. So that's wonderful. If people wanted to connect with you, wanted to learn more after the show, what would be the best way for them to find you?
Definitely LinkedIn. Find me, Shannon Legacy Howard, on LinkedIn.
Okay, wonderful. We'll share that out as well to make it easier for people to find you. Shannon, just thank you so much for your time here today. I think it's been great, a great conversation for myself and for our listeners. And just thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This was very fun.
Thank you for tuning in to another great episode of The Advocacy Channel. Join us next time as we bring on more expert guests like Shannon. If you like what you heard and would like to help support The Advocacy Channel, please review, rate, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about customer marketing, head over to the Sasquatch blog or follow us on LinkedIn. The links are in the show notes. If you're looking to create powerful customer marketing programs that will help you better activate, engage, and retain your customers throughout their entire journey, head over to Sasquatch.com through the link in the episode's description and learn more about our referral, loyalty, and rewards platform. Well, that wraps up another great episode of The Advocacy Channel. We'll see you real soon.